Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
It's hot.
Yeah, it is. It's still too. Summer.
Why?
Because that's what happens during the year. It's summer for while.
I want to go to where it's not summer.
Tim, is it?
I don't want to be it, like,
hey, it's hot up there.
Not the planet Earth. You're pretty soon, let me tell you what.
What I'm hearing is I need to create a big metal dick to take me to the cold place.
Yeah. Big metal dick. Purnell's here too.
Did you just call Purnell a big metal dick?
Purnell is a gigantic metal dick. I saw the paperwork. True? I met him at MAGFest.
He made a clangy sound.
Yes, he is metallic.
It's on my birth certificate too.
Metallic and metallic.
So
that's a band name, right? It should be a band.
Bezos rode Purnell into space. Is that what
sure?
I'm sure some of Purnell's dollars were involved in him amassing the wealth to shoot himself into space for not 10 much, minutes.
Not as much as for some, honestly.
Absolutely.
No, did you not see the dick spaceship? It was a dick.
I didn't see the ship, no.
Oh, it was 100% a dick.
I have ignored everything about the news that I could regarding Jeff Bezos because I don't give a fuck about that idiot.
Here we are talking about it. Dick.
I know.
Well, because I can't help myself because it was a dick, y'all.
I mean, it is the news, and it's phallic. It was phallic news is a winner.
We are here for weenies.
No, speaking of dicks.
Hello.
Hey, Chris is here.
Hey, look at
great timing. Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I fell asleep in my chair, and I didn't... didn't have the ringer like where it was coming through the speakers. It was hooked up through my microphone.
Are you tired by chance?
My what?
Tired?
Yeah, always.
You gonna be okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Always.
Cole asked the first time and I thought she asked if you were like tarred and feathered.
Oh yeah, well I mean are you maybe tarred? It is pretty hot down here.
That's
true. We're talking about how hot it is where we're at. You're in Texas. How hot is it there right now?
We're triple digits now. So
173.
Jesus. Yeah. Don't make it sound that bad.
It is that bad.
173?
Okay, close.
I don't know. I know
72.
Yeah, 172 is fine. 173, you might try to find some shade.
Yeah, that's where you gotta draw the line.
Yeah.
I feel bad bitching now, because it's only like 78 here right now. It actually feels pretty good.
It's 78 and you're complaining.
It was hot earlier. Oh, jeez. But it's fine now. Like, right now, it's actually pretty good. But
yeah, that's one of the things, in, you know, when it comes to Texas, is that it doesn't get cooler at night.
Yeah. It does here. Generally, like, it's supposed to get down to 65, and like, that's good sleeping weather right there.
Yeah,
it is. My weather app says it's 74. My weather app also says I can't find any Russian prostitutes, so I'm going to pay these clouds to pee on you.
You got one of those.
Yeah,
video game waiting to be written right there, I guess.
And then on my main screen it just says, guess what, chuckle fuck, it's mostly cloudy.
Tinkle game. That's that probably does already exist. There was that one game where you got really drunk and you had to pee it out. You just peed all over the street. And there was also Conker that also made you do that. You peed to put out fires, which...
Death Stranding has you pissing.
Does it?
Yeah.
To process it in, like, water, it's like explosives or something like that?
Because they had to be, like, all careful that you couldn't move the camera to see Norman Reedus's dick.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I wonder if they modeled his wang in the game.
I'm sure they did
or
not.
Or if it's just Kendall down there.
Yeah.
See it done them.
It's all smooth.
Fucking yeah!
Kendall like a
Barbie, yeah.
It's on PC, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Also, Lloyd Berry just went and subscribed with Twitch Prime. Lloyd, thank you so much for the subscription. Good to have you here. Enjoy your emotes. Enjoy your hey kids. I love that emote.
Thank you for making a bad decision.
Yes.
Where's Twitch Prime?
Oh my God, Purnell, sometimes.
Why would I know what Twitch Prime is?
Tell you what, it's almost like you do a show on Twitch every week.
I know, on Twitch, not Twitch Prime.
Twitch Prime is on Twitch.
Is it just like
it's Amazon it's a Prime? It's a free subscription that you get with Amazon Prime.
Oh, and yeah. Not only does he have to send his dick into space, but he has to also even give his free subscription a special name and know that you got it from me, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly, I think.
And it's worth a whole $2.50.
Yay. That will not buy a giant metal dick.
Will not.
And
now I have to find a picture of this goddamn spaceship.
You're welcome. It was a dick. Chris, tell him. It was a dick, yo.
What? Tell who what?
Tell Joe that Jeff Bezos' spaceship that took him into space for like 30 seconds was a dick.
Oh, yeah, that's a penis.
It took him near space.
Near space. Just like a dick does with a woman. It gets almost there, and then it says, no, 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 and turns around.
Okay, yeah, that's a dick. I mean, they didn't even try hiding it.
Well, it's like
the heavens. It had to pierce the heavens. There you go.
It gets there. It gets almost there for about 10 minutes, and it's like I'm seen enough.
Yep. It rubbed the atmosphere on its thigh through its leggings. And it was like, nailed it.
Oh Lord.
Mission accomplished. I got mine. I don't care about that.
So anyway, now that everyone's here, should we jump into reviews? We have a lot of games to talk about tonight.
Yeah, we probably should then.
Yeah, we got a lot of games to talk about tonight. The first game, we're going to kick things off with World's End Club, developed by 2KO Games, published by NIS America, released May 28th on the Switch for $39.99. The Go-Getters Club, a group of misfit students from all over Japan, find themselves trapped in a strange theme park during a class trip. In order to unravel the mystery of their circumstances and find an escape, they must take part in a game of fate that will test their bonds of friendship. Purnell, tell us about your time with World's End Club.
I swear, even that description is a good reason for me to even start my review like I'm going to do, which is that when World's End Club got promoted and advertised, a few things came about. One, it was the follow-up game of, if I'm not mistaken, the Danganronpa guy, or one of the follow-up games. And if not, it was definitely trying to be fairly similar to that with the whole game of fate slash death game or whatever. And it's even in the description you just read off. However, it's worth pointing out that when other people were reviewing it and I was reading up on what they had to say, most of them were like kind of downing the game. And a lot of it was because of said, like, you know, retreaded ground. But really, I don't even know why they did that, because actually that aspect of the game is only like the first 20 minutes of it. And then after that, it's a whole nother game. And that aspect of the game is what I actually came away being okay with and enjoying. The idea behind this game is that a group of kids are on a bus one day and they witness, this isn't a spoiler, this is literally the beginning of the game. They're on a bus one day and they witness a meteor hit Tokyo and they all get knocked out. And when they wake up, they're in the aforementioned theme park. The gameplay of the theme park takes place and it is considered pretty much, you know, a game of fate as, you know, that's the game of fate. The first kid to say, oh shit, gets called, ooh, a swear word, and that's the end of the game. But no, the actual game of fate is basically the same concept you would expect. You know, only one of the kids can make it out and the rest have to suffer. But things occur, resulting in them leaving that place. And it actually becomes a cross-country trip across Japan to get from where they are to Tokyo. I'm not going to explain the why they're there or anything like that, because that's where it starts becoming spoilers. But as you get out and you start to get this cross-country trek, this is when the real game starts up. And what ends up happening here is you end up interacting with these children through a series of, like, you know, it's like general story bits. Think of a flow chart, you know, stage, like act one, act 1-2 or act 3 or whatever. And there's nodes for each act. And when you open up one of those nodes, it'll be a story sequence that takes place. And then eventually you'll ultimately end up having like a sort of a, let's just say a side scroller. Like, it's actually a platformer. In this situation, you end up patrolling a group of the kids, usually end up splitting up for various circumstances. And as they split up, you end up controlling one of the kids at a time while they're with their group of friends running along. And you can jump, you know, you can pick up objects and throw objects sometimes and push and pull objects. And you're basically avoiding danger. Again, what that danger is, well, I guess it's not a spoiler. It's just all kinds of weird, like crazy insects and just like world-ending type adversaries. That's a good way to put it, because in the title.
Insects. They're cicadas. Can't escape those sons of bitches.
Well, you can, by crazy means. Because
I was going to say, you can't escape them, but you can put them in chocolate.
Okay, we're not going back there.
I'll still eat them. So what ends up happening, in addition to the normal platforming, is as the game progresses, for reasons that I won't say, over time, each of the kids develops a sort of super ability. And that ability comes into play in regards to how you traverse the stages. For example, the earliest one, so it's not a major spoiler, it's just the first thing you learn. One of the kids gains the ability to just like has like a super pitch, so he can pick up an object and just like throw it like a super baseball player or something. So it ends up becoming a factor of the gameplay where you have to pick up an object, locate something you need to knock out or knock down or whatever, and you hit it, and that triggers like, you know, a bit of a puzzle thing. So it results in some light puzzle gameplay too, as you're trying to get from point A to point B. Never becomes really complicated, because I genuinely think this game was designed with the intent being for, like, you know, for younger people to be able to play it too, even though it does still have that sense of danger or whatnot for the kids. But they are kids at the core. So, I mean, that ends up being the overall gameplay. And every once in a while, after outside of the platforming stages and the story elements, sometimes you'll also camp out because these kids need to sleep. And that takes place in the form of camping segments where you'll be able to talk to all the kids and get a little bit of dialogue about what they're feeling and how they're thinking about things, and even get a little bit of like cross character dialogue going sometimes too. Just a nice way to get characterization to take place. Two more things to bring up, which is that at certain points in the game, you'll be asked to choose to make a decision, you know, basically because the group decide that there's a decision that needs to get made. The group is split on it. And you're made to choose which decision you want to go along with. And that determines the next few stages you'll take, which means you won't see every level or every story sequence on your first playthrough of the game. But when you beat the game, you can go back and do the areas you didn't do before. And I kind of like that because it's an ensemble of like 11 or 12 kids. So it's a good way to separate them so that you don't have to worry about what 11 or 12 kids are going to say all the time.
No.
This group now is a group of 4 kids. What are they talking about? It's easier to pull off dialogue that way. But honestly, I feel as though this game, at its core, does work. The only real gripe I had about the narrative aspect of things is that I wish Japan would get off of just using kids in all their damn stories, because even when they write them sometimes, they talk with a brevity that belies their age. Like, they get nostalgic for, like, family vacations and getting chicken at a special stand in another town. 10 years old. And they supposedly moved from that town 3 years ago. So it implies that they're having these vivid, fond memories that they can describe very well from when they were 6 or 7. And it's like, that doesn't know. You clearly want to have a 20-year-old having this conversation, but you had to make them an elementary school kid. Doesn't make sense to me.
I remember a lot from when I was 6 and 7.
Not the way these kids are talking about it. They get in debt. And then you have the normal hot tub conversations. Like, you know, the typical Japan things, like, hot tubs together? No. Oh, you're not looking at her like that, are you? 10-year-olds, well, and when I was growing up, 10-year-olds were a little weird. But I feel like 10-year-olds don't think like that at that age. They're embarrassed, yeah, but not like, oh, you're attracted to her? Oh, you're feeling it now? Like, no, they're fucking kids. Stop it. These are like, they're writing them for older people. Don't get me wrong, I'm okay with the writing in general, but like I said, it's just obvious that these characters should probably be older for the way they're interacting with each other in some scenario. But that aside, I still very much enjoyed the game, and I enjoyed, you know, seeing the story progress and figuring out what the heck happened here. Why is the world, why did the world end, per se? And why do they have to endure these situations? Because make no mistake about it, they are in situations where they could die. So this isn't like, you know, it's all a game. No, they could die. So, and it's actually nice to see that they are dealing with this together as friends. There's no real, like, well, aside from the initial part of the game, there's no, like, heavy malice at play. It's just, let's work together to get the hell out of here, figure out what's going on. But it's a good game. Just nice. Don't come in expecting Danganronpa or anything like that, because the whole Game of Fate stuff that they like to push, because you're not getting Danganronpa, you're getting World's End Club.
Yeah, so, judge it by its own merits and don't expect it to be something else.
Agreed.
So $40 on World's End Club, what do you say?
I honestly think it's a buy. It's a good time. And it's not particularly expensive. I mean, it's not 60 or 50. 40, I think, is a good price for it.
Cool. All right, next game to talk about is called Trigger Witch, developed by Rainbite, published by East Asia Soft, released July 28th on Xbox One and PS4, 29th on the Switch for $14.99. Recalling the visual style and intuitive gameplay of 16-bit action-adventure classics, Trigger Witch puts an ultraviolet spin on cute and colorful pixel art with a compelling and original narrative, puzzling environments to explore, dynamic soundtrack, twin-stick shooter mechanics, and a vast array of enemies to blast into smithereens. This is a tale that will grip you from start to bloody finish. Tim, tell us about your time with Trigger Witch.
I mean, yeah, it's ultra violent, but it's like silly because you're like a lot of what you're shooting is like, I don't know, they're like vegetables and fruit.
You mean mushrooms aren't filled with red blood?
Yeah, no, not around here, not around these parts, not that I've seen, not when I'm cutting up my mushrooms for my food. They're not like bleeding all over the my cutting board. No, but though it did definitely strike me when I started playing the game, started shooting things, how they were just leaving big bloody smears across like the ground. So even though like it is kind of cutesy, it's still like, wow, there's blood everywhere. Blood, very pink. I don't know. It's, yeah. So yeah, this is a Trigger Witch is a kind of top down Zelda like game, except it's a twin stick shooter. So you start out the game. You are a witch in this town of witches who have apparently forgotten how to do magic long ago, and they're just all in on guns these days. Yeah, you know, as you come of age, you get your first gun and go through the trials of shooting them, or, you know, some shooting trials and shit, and so that you can join the clip and stuff like, I don't know, like the all the gun references in this game, like, I don't know, it's kind of exhausting. It's like, yeah, I get it. It's not like cute and fun like it is in like Enter the Gungeon, where it's just silly and ridiculous and you're fighting bullets and shells and like the bosses are silly. This, it's, you know, not anything resembling like a deal breaker, but I was just kind of like, okay, I get it. Yes, gun references, ladies and gents, we get it. But that's kind of besides the point, and actually becomes less of a focal point kind of the further into the game you get. So yeah, you take your trial to join the clip, and then some mysterious stuff happens, and you are this mysterious figure appears who steals away to the sealed lands of the north. And to break the seal and go north, you have to go retrieve these three ingredients to make a, you know, I don't know, some fucking thing to open it. So you travel around. It's like, you know, first you have to go track down a dragon, but the dragon has flown away from its cave and is wreaking havoc in the nearby munitions factory that, if as a story point, creates all the ammunition that magically refills into your guns. Because there isn't like ammo pickups. Your main weapon is the aforementioned hand cannon, just like a really heavy revolver, and that you can just reload infinitely. As you go through the game, you will pick up different weapons that have different utility in battle and out of battle. In some cases, it may vary. And the way those work is that you'll like empty your mag, and then you just have to put it away for a second, and then it will automatically refill, and then you can whip it back out and start shooting things again. But yeah, you chase this dragon into a nearby munitions factory, and then the game, you know, it plays out not unlike a Zelda-style dungeon, where you're exploring different rooms, you're finding keys, you're solving pretty simple puzzles. Like, I did not find any of the puzzles to be... Well, okay, I'll get to that. Solving some, like, pretty simple puzzles, and then somewhere in the middle of said dungeon, you would find a new... gun and or ability, which will let you, so like in the first dungeon, you will find like this heavy grenade launcher that lets you break chains that are holding the door shut to the central room where the dragon is wreaking havoc. So the thing is, though, I've only seen it actually used in that utility fashion in that dungeon and not afterward. After that dungeon, it was kind of like, okay, whatever, even though you have it, we're never going to talk about it again. And, you know, later on, you get a flamethrower, which you can use to melt ice blocks, but, you know, will also torch enemies and stuff like that. So the first dungeon also gives you a broom, or the ability to animate like an inanimate object, but it only uses it for particular, like two particular places in that dungeon, where suddenly like your overhead dungeon crawling thing becomes a like scrolling top down shooter. And I'm kind of sad there isn't more of that in the game, because when it started happening, I was like, oh my God, this is like Guardian Legend. This is sweet. But so far, those shooting stages have been contained to that very first level, which is a bummer for me. But yeah, once you get the first three ingredients, you then open up the north, like half of the map, which is pretty vast. And then you have new quests to accomplish, but like at its heart, you know, the game is top down. It is move with the left stick, aim with the right stick, and then pull the trigger, your right trigger, to shoot. The game spawns, you know, enemy waves in different rooms, and that it mentioned the dynamic music in the copy there, and yeah, the area music will kind of intensify once you are in combat. It handles healing in a pretty solid way, and just like you have like a healing flask, and when it's empty, it will just gradually fill as you slaughter enemies. So presumably it's being filled with their blood.
Yes.
That's my headcanon, which is being filled with turnip juice. Sure. And then, yeah.
Didn't they say at the beginning, it's like filled with the souls of the dead, and that's how it heals you?
Sure. Sure.
Something like that.
Sounds good. Yeah. Very arcane. There is, as you explore the world, there is upgrades. They give you like upgrade pieces, like weapon mod pieces that are just kind of generic, because then you can go to a shop and drop them down on the weapon of your choice. And once you drop them onto that weapon, like if you drop on the attack of your assault rifle thing, then you can then pour currency into upgrading the power of your assault rifle, which is fine. I kind of wish that, like, every single weapon, it's, like, power, it is rate of fire, it is ammo capacity and reload speed. I kind of wish there was, like, some variety between the things you could upgrade on the different weapons, like the grenade launcher thing. I would like to see, you know, upgraded splash damage, or, a longer flame on the flamethrower, you know, stuff like that, just to make it more unique. But it's just kind of generic from weapon to weapon, which is kind of a bummer. As you explore the overworld, there are secrets to find, which is how you will usually they'll put some of those in your way, but there will be some that will be hidden off in caves, and there will be extra challenges for you to go through. And it's pretty fun overall. The way this game is standing out the most to me is it has as co-op. All the way through the game, you just press start and it will drop in a pink witch alongside your blue witch, just anywhere in the game. Just no real like storyline reason for it. No difference between the characters. Like your second witch will get the same, weapon upgrades. You don't upgrade weapons individually. You're not like crafting your own character. But the fact that it's so simple and easy to drop in means I can play this game with my child. and he loves it. He is having a great time playing it with me. And for, like, I played up through the first dungeon and a little bit more by myself. And as I was going through the first dungeon, kind of going through every room, I was kind of like, ah, this is kind of becoming like a little bit of a grind. Like, I wasn't being too challenged by the enemies and just, you know, just kind of going through the motions of, oh, there's also a dash that's important with a bit of invincibility on it. You know, just kind of going through the motions. But like, once I got him in there and kind of like, you know, got him used to the controls, we were, you know, mowing through enemies twice as fast. And it just sped up the pace of the game a little bit. So it made it like extra fun. And he was like, we probably won't get, I don't know when we're going to play more because he's going to grandma's house this weekend, but he has been pestering me to since this weekend to sit down and play more Trigger Witch because he loves Trigger Witch.
Are you playing it on pinata mode with him?
We are not playing it on pinata mode. Oh, does that make candy fall out of the enemies instead of blood? Is that what that is?
Yes, it turns it into confetti instead of blood.
Oh, yeah. No,
either loves Trigger Witch or he hates vegetables.
Maybe a bit of both. Maybe. Yeah, I looked at that option. It didn't say what it did. And I was like, whatever.
You can actually get an achievement for killing so many enemies with pinata mode on.
Maybe I'll turn on pinata mode. He thinks it's pretty funny that they explode in blood, though.
Well, it is. I think it's fucking hilarious.
It is pretty funny. But yeah, that alone kind of identified itself as a, you know, I mean, that's a fucking winner in my book. Any game I can sit down and play and have a good time myself and with the child is awesome. But as, you know, as far as a single player experience, I think it's still solid. I think, you know, just from my kind of early experience, it might become a little bit of tedious sometimes in the dungeons, like between picking up new weapons, just blasting things. But, you know, the shooting and the action is pretty solid. It's a fun world. It's interesting. You know, the whole, it is funny because, you know, when it's not like when you think of a witch, think of like a 5-year-old in a witch costume witch. Like, that's what these witches are. Like, it's just that with the pointy hat and the basic robe, but with like, you know, an AK-47 in hand. Like, that's the aesthetic. It's just fun and silly in that regard. But yeah, it's solidly built besides that and has a good variety of stuff. And just,
one of my concerns is I love the variety of weapons in the game. Mm-hmm. I don't like that once it empties its clip, it just switches right back to the hand cannon. Because why not just use my hand cannon instead?
Because it doesn't shoot fast enough. Because the flamethrower is more fun.
I wish it wouldn't default right back to the hand cannon once your clip empties. Just let me reload it and keep using that gun instead of having to switch constantly.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, especially once you like upgrade the reload speed. Because like I upgraded the reload speed on the assault rifle like all the way first thing. So that way it's like I switch off of it and like within like a second it's reloaded. So it's kind of pointless. You're like, you're not wrong. But as it is, usually, like, for me, I just kind of got conscious of how long it would take me to blast through a, you know, a magazine on a particular weapon, and then I just switch to the next one, and then switch back, and just kind of hop. Like, once you get, you know, 4 weapons, and you're hopping between all of them, like, you don't go back to the hand cannon, really, at all, unless you're, like, solving puzzles and don't want to deal with it. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, the third thing you get is some akimbo Uzis, and I'm like, boy, if it could tighten the shot spread on those, they'd be a lot better. But as it is, they fire wildly, so it has some limited utility. But
oh, man, well, yeah, $15 on Trigger Witch. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good. I think that's a very solid price for it. Like, the game is, I would. Not quite done with it. I would guesstimate that it's like around 10-ish hours, maybe a little less, maybe a little more if you're 100%ing it and trying to get everything. So like, it's a solid length for that price. It's plenty of fun, especially if you have someone else to play it with, even if they're not like a super great gamer, like my child. I mean, he's okay. You know, this is his first twin stick shooter. So, you know, it's a great game to play along with him because I can just boss him around and tell him what to do. And, you know, when you die, like you turn into a ghost and there's a timer, and then you can just zip over and tag their ghost and they'll be back in. So it's not even like they're out for a particularly long period of time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Fantastic Night Dreams Cotton Reboot, developed by Beep, published by Innin Games, released July 20th on Switch and PS4 for $39.99. Japan's favorite shooter mascot finds her way into a beautiful HD game with stunning graphics and remix soundtracks. This is the original cute 'em up and will test your skills as well as tug on the heartstrings as Cotton and her friends are finally back in the ultimate celebration of one of Japan's most beloved gaming mascots. Chris, tell us about your time with Cotton Reboot.
Okay, well, tug at the heartstrings is a funny one to me. Oh, by the way, just quickly on the last game that Tim was just talking about, the thing I think is cool about Trigger Witch is that it was it's the second game developed by Rainbite, which did Reverie.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked. Anyway.
Nice.
And which also had a lot of the same good and bad about it. Anyways. Okay, so yeah. Back to the game I'm talking about.
Yeah, Cotton Reboot.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, for people who don't know, which is, you know, 99% of Americans, because, you know, this game never came out over here, Cotton Fantastic Night Dreams is a 1991 arcade shmup, a shoot-em-up, that featured, you know, a cute witch character who, was kind of, yeah, a cute mascot, which was a little rare at the time for shooters, but at since then has been done, you know, quite to death. But yeah, the 30th anniversary of that game is this year, so I guess they decided to bring the franchise back. Well, I mean, it's kind of been back in Japan, but like they, you know, cause they did a game in 2007-ish or whatever. And, you know, they brought it over to the United States, I think officially for the first time. I'm not too sure. They may have brought one of the other games over somehow, but I mean, this is it's a much more famous over there type of thing than it is over here. So yeah, like I said, the character of it, what's her name? Nata, I think. Nata de Cotton or something like that. I don't know. I should have had that information pulled up. But, yeah, she is a little girl witch, which, you know, sounds like the last review, right? And flying around on a broomstick and shooting things. And she There's is...
different perspective in this one.
Yeah, different perspective in this one, although I think it's great that you put the two reviews together like this.
But that was a total accident. He didn't
plan complete this. Accident.
Oh, I know. But, you know, we can pretend, right? No, I guess we can't. Cause
not anymore.
Yeah. Not anymore. Anyways, she is charged with the task of finding 7 pieces of magical candy called Willow. Willow candy, and that's her favorite thing in the whole world. In fact, it's like seems to be like literally her motivation for living is eating this kind of candy. However, she has to find all 7 pieces without eating them, and you know, that causes some anime style goofiness. This game, funny enough, like back in 1991 was kind of hand drawn by an anime artist, which was also kind of rare at the time. That, you know, it wasn't a game designer, it was an anime artist, like, that kind of made all the designs and stuff. So it kind of gave it, to me, like, it actually kind of looks more modern than a lot of the games back then. But, anyways, so you go through the stages and whatnot, and, you know, it's side-scrolling shooter, you know, the usual, like, there's really cute enemies on the screen. It's just, you know, you're an anime fighting other animes, and the bosses are kind of great. Special shout out to the second stage boss, which is a Grim Reaper that has rocket fists and doesn't really need much else. I mean, come on. But yeah, then once you get through, then, you know, it's whatever. I actually lost my train of thought on what I was going to say there.
Good job.
I may still be
Good
a
job,
little
Cole.
Bit asleep. Anyways.
She's
what
just
did
seething.
I do?
You were muted and not paying attention.
I couldn't get the mouse back over to the right screen fast enough.
See, if you weren't playing Cozy Grove during the show.
I am not, but I do need to check my Cozy Grove because I finally hit 90 consecutive days yesterday, and now I need to continue so I can finish that shit.
Nice. I actually do that, too. I, like, sometimes will go over to, like, interject something, but then my cursor doesn't make it over to unmute fast enough, so then I just skip it.
And then you're just like, well, there's no point now. They done moved on. Stop talking so fast, you motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well. Such is the podcasting world.
Indeed. Con
so,
reboot.
So, yeah, the arcade game was first, well, I don't know about first, but it was, I guess, most popularly ported to the also Japan-only Sharp X68000 PC. Kind of a gaming PC thing. And that version of the game is a slight bit different than the arcade version. It, like, adds some stuff. And that's the version that the reboot is based off of. And not only is the reboot here, but they also included the full original game, the X68K version. And so that's in there, too, which is kind of cool. So I actually played through both and beat them. And let me tell you, the modern version's way better. They really ramped up, like, the size of the shots and stuff like that. Okay, so the main, like, draw of this kind of game is that as you defeat enemies and pick up these kind of bouncy jewels that they drop, which bounce if you shoot them, a little bit like Twinbee, as you pick those up, you gain levels, and the levels are how you make your shots better. And if you die, then you lose experience and levels. And so it's like kind of trying to keep it, you know, as close to max level as you can. There's 13 levels in total. The first game, if you get killed, then you drop, like, you see that little experience bar just, like, plummet, and you, like, lose 3 or 4 levels, you know, per death or whatever. But in this one, if you're, like, at max and you die, then it just, it keeps you at level 12, but, you know, you just need to get some more experience to, like, actually max it out. So it's a lot more merciful this time with that. It's adds a lot more difficulty balance, which is great. However, both games are totally beatable using rich kid strats because they give you, of course, free play, and the game does not make you lose any kind of progress or even your score if you get a game over. Nice. So you can actually still rank with your score playing all the way through the game, even if you get a game over halfway through. However, of course, the largest point bonuses are for not getting hit at all.
Yeah.
You know, your clear bonuses and whatnot. But, you know, and if you do care about score, then there is a global ranking in this game. There's also a new time attack mode, which allows you to play for 2 to 5 minutes. Just get in there and, you know, do your best. I did, and I'm proud to say that I'm already in the top 1,400 players.
Good job.
Yay. yeah, I'm not
good. Congratulations on 1399th.
Yeah, exactly. It was 1327, I'll have you know.
All right.
If I would have gotten 100 more points, I would have gotten into the 1200s. No, I'm just kidding.
Keep barking.
Probably wouldn't have.
Keep barking.
Anyways.
So, 40 anyways. Bucks on Cotton Reboot. What are you thinking?
I think that this is a great shoot 'em up, and I had hardly any problems with it at all, and you get a whole lot of content for it. Now, obviously, the $40, you know, on the Switch, which, you know, you can get some of the best ones for half that. The reason why it's $40 is because it has several, like, physical versions that have come out. You know, there's the, of course, Strictly Limited came out with two collector's editions, one of which is $95 and one of which is $150 or $130 and, I know it's 130 pounds. So I guess about $150. Good luck getting that one. That's gone.
Drop it. But,
yeah, the physical version of it is also $39.99. So I would say it's worth it either way. However, if you are a budget conscious shmup fan, I mean, there's nothing that really puts this over something like Rolling Gunner or, you know, even, you know, a lot of the, you know, actually,
I feel like we talked about something last week, you know, Fushigami-sama.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we'll talk about something next week, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So, oh, well, I got to give a quick shout out to Hazy JT, who just dropped 150 biddies on chat. Thank you, Hazy. Good to see you okay. here. No, yeah. Sounds like Cotton Reboot's good.
Yeah, it's good. I would say for the same price, get the physical, but, you know, or wait on sale for the digital if you're budget conscious. But, I mean, based on the quality of it and the content, it's worth it. I say buy it.
All right, next game to talk about is called Fallen Knight, developed by Fairplay Studios, published by P-Cube, released July 20th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Fallen Knight is a futuristic knight's tale that lets players play as a descendant of the great Lancelot in King Arthur's tale. Players will take on the role of Lancelot the 49th in a futuristic setting, facing off against six
fucking
unique enemy heroes with a dark past of their own.
Unique.
And, Raider Biz is subbed because of Cole. Oh, what are you doing?
Gifting subs.
Look at you. You fucking crazy. Yeah. You crazy. Fucking yeah. Right, Purnell? I meant you, Purnell.
He's not paying attention.
He's not paying attention.
Fucking yeah.
Talking about falling asleep during the show.
You don't know who's Purnell and who's not Purnell. There's too many Purnells nowadays.
I know. It's okay. Right, now? George?
Listen here, fuck snort.
All right. Anyway, Fallen Knight. Tim, tell us about Fallen Knight.
All right, man. We've had a streak of good games tonight. Well, it's time for Fallen Knight to fuck that up.
Oh, no.
I get to write down the sentence. It's like Mighty Number 9, but worse.
Oh, no.
Ouch.
I finished Mighty Number 9. You know, I got through it. Like, it has some of the same problems, though. But more of them, more problems slathered onto it.
This makes me sad. I was looking forward to this one.
It looks, when you look at this game, it looks pretty solid. I think, like, the look of the knights and the look of the environments, like, I think mostly the environments are more interesting than the environments in Mighty Number 9, for the record. And kind of, like, the movement and somehow, like, the idea of, like, the Knights of the Round Table persevering through centuries until future times is amusing and kind of interesting to me. And when you first play through like the introductory level and your character, you know, you are double jumping, air dashing around, you have a heal, where you like hold down the B button and you can use a certain amount of accrued, dead enemy energy to like heal yourself, heal a point of your health. It's like, okay, this seems like pretty solid. It has like a parry, like enemies will give you like a little kind of
inflow,
like their eyes will gleam when they're about to attack you, so you can try to hit the button to parry them. So there's like some systems going on. You can slide along walls and you know, jump your way up them like you would in a Mega Man X. That kind of feels like what this game is most going after. But then once you get out of that introductory level, it strips away all those abilities and like strips the fun out of the game at the same time.
And stripping the fun out of the show is Hazy JT, who just subbed for his fifth month.
That's injecting the fun.
That is, but it's us, so... It's wasted fun.
It's encouraging us, so yeah. Therefore it's a net
It was a huge mistake.
Drop it, Biz!
Raider Biz like, just dropped 200 biddies. We have a hype train in Twitch. Nice. What the hell? What the hell is a hype train?
It's like, fill us in.
It's when more people are supposed to get hype and give you more monies because they already gave you money.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea.
Like, yeah. It's like, you know, they do donation trains on GDQ where everyone like does like $5 and, you know, a bunch of people get in on it for a while. Anyways,
Fallen Knight does not sound hype.
No, it's not hype. So, you know,
drop it,
stage, and it
AZ JT on, with 100 bits
and it drops you onto a Mega Man X Esh stage select of five stages, except one's already beaten because it's the introductory stage, which was immediately like,
then why have that there?
Whatever.
Yeah, drop it. I have it. I guess
you can revisit it because now,
oh no, Cole dropped a 100 bitty.
I would love to get through this
review. I got you a dollar.
You are not getting through this review, Tim.
Hold your bits till the end. Your bit announcements to the end. I didn't write a page of notes shitting on this game for nothing. Come on.
God.
I wrote way more about this than Trigger Witch, because I wanted to remember everything that went wrong so people know.
So anyways,
it strips your stuff away, and then you have to buy it back with your honor points. So now, as you go through levels and you fight enemies and you defeat them, you will gain honor points.
Honorable
fashion, presumably by parrying their attack and you know, disarming. I think when you attack them after a parry, you disarm them rather than like destroy them. You get points to spend on your abilities, except you don't really get a whole lot of honor points. And if you motherfucking die, your honor points go back to zero.
Oh, and no.
Besides, you know, you'll probably maybe get through the level okay, because levels have a varying amount of instant death traps, which was a problem in Mighty No. 9. Cheap bullshit like that. And sometimes they conspire
with other things, like
the camera not quite moving enough to tell you that, like, oh no, this is a death pit, not a, you know, just you scrolling down, you going down to a lower level on the screen. Like, no, you need to jump up that wall. Or you maybe not quite making a jump because of how not quite great the controls are. And so you just fall short of a jump and go down into a lava pit after you went all the way to the left to hit a switch and then all the way to the right to hit a switch. And then you were making your way back to the middle to get on the elevator. And then you die on the last jump. Maybe that happened. I'm guessing that happened. Oh, it did more than once.
You know what else happened?
Was it some biddies?
Root Beer dropped 200 biddies and Lloyd dropped 100 biddies. We made level 2 of the hype train.
So when, yeah, the thing is though, like when you get to the end of the level, then you got to fight the boss, and chances are, you know, when you get to the boss, you got to like learn his patterns and shit, and you're going to die a few times figuring that out. And then inevitably you're going to leave the level with just the points you get from beating the boss. And like, you know, after actually completing a couple levels, like I still didn't have enough to like just get my goddamn double jump back. And at this point I'm halfway through the fucking game, cause it's not that many levels. And it's just like, why, like, do they like this expectation that you're going to grind through levels to get these points or get like better scores and like power up your character? Is there anything else I forgot about that? No. If you start on, there's like an easy mode, and in that mode, then you keep all of your stuff, like all those abilities, but you're too powerful because you have like this auto heal. So like you just keep like, you know, regenerating health, like on a ticker kind of. So then the only thing standing in your way of enjoying the game is the bad mechanics. Well, and all still the instant stuff, death stuff is still present to, you know, piss you off. But the, like, there's just some like bad things about controlling the character. Like when you hit jump, there is one jump height in this game, no matter how hard you press that button.
And drop it, bitch!
A decision, and it's not what I'm gonna call a good one. As like the entire history of like good platformers tells you, if you touch the button a little, you should jump just a little bit. But that, like, you know, having to anticipate the full height of your jump on every jump when you're trying to avoid enemies or do attacks is, it sucks. When you try to like hit jump and attack like very quickly to like, you know, I'm going to jump, but I'm going to try to attack just as I leave the ground, like hitting attack will actually cancel your jump. And that's vice versa. Yes, it's bad. Instead of you doing like, you know, a jump and immediately attacking, it'll be like, oh, wait, you meant to attack, so you're not going to jump. It's going to cancel the jump, so you just slash instead. But sometimes it's like, oh, I'm going to attack and then jump real fast. Instead, it cancels the attack and you just jump and you don't attack. That's, I think, the most. But there's just like sometimes when the controls just generally speaking don't feel all that responsive besides that. But that really made it feel bad for me when there's not that much going on. There is a massive lack of enemy variety. Also a problem with Mighty No. 9. Like all the enemies are pretty much cut from the same cloth and just have slight modifications. Like, okay, here's the guy that has like a gun and just shoots you on kind of like a timer. Here's the guy, he has a drill arm and he charges at you. This guy has a shield and will
fucking like launch missiles.
This guy, you know, but they all look the same. They just like have slightly different trimmings to them. And like some of the levels, like, oh, there's also like this little flying dude that's like this little green like X that flies through the air and will attack you. And like the first like couple stages I played outside of the tutorial just use these same four enemies over and over again. There are more, but they still follow that same model as the other generic enemies. So what else? I'll finish out the bad stuff.
Do you want to mention any good?
There is. Yeah, I'll get there. There's one one good thing I'll mention. So the music. So this game is when you boot the game up, there's no title screen. It just takes you straight to the data select, which just seemed kind of janky to me. Also janky that there's just like some random grammatical errors in the text. Like the way the story is conveyed is really boring. It's just text on screen. Not like any cutscenes. There's a few and like a few like still shots that it'll use, but not much. But like the stage music and the like post-stage like story music is completely unbalanced, and you can't like
what? Pancakes
in the options. So like the stage music is really quiet below the sound effects, so you can't really hear it all that well. So I can tell you if it's good or not, but then like you'll get to the end of a stage and like the music is like coming on like gangbusters. Just, you know, kind of shoddy stuff there. So what is good? What does that mean? Start as text on. Okay. What is good? So there's the mode where you play as Lancelot, which is kind of the main mode. And then they have this other mode where you play as Galahad. And it has some really interesting ideas in that suddenly the game becomes more of like a roguelike, in that when you go into a stage, it'll give you like a random assortment of abilities you can equip to your character that you have to select. And some will have like positives and negatives. And he also adheres to like some different rule sets. Like he has no healing other than parrying. You have to parry in order to restore health when you're playing as Galahad. And he has some other, you know, kind of moves and abilities that are unique to him. And when I say roguelike, I mean, when you die in this mode, that's it. You go back to the beginning of the game. So it seems interesting, but then you remember all the other shit I just said about how the game plays and how the instant death traps, and you understand how that is still not fun, but it's an interesting idea. And I wish everything else was better to support that.
So it's an interesting idea. The game just didn't hold up. $15.
There's one interesting idea. No, you shouldn't buy this at all. No, don't do it. Please don't. We talked about another game. I talked about another game that was $15 and was much more fun and interesting earlier on the show. Buy that one, not this one.
And we'll probably talk about another good $15 game in a little bit.
Ooh, the suspense is killing me.
Yeah, but you won't be here because you're leaving.
No, I'm going to, man, it is fucking hot in this room. We talked about weather earlier and like it rained, so it cooled off outside, but I don't have like a fan or anything on because we're recording this, and I am just dripping with sweat in this fucking room for whatever reason. I'm ready to go cool off.
Well, you enjoy that. We're going to keep sweating our asses off. All right. Have any final words before we let you go?
No, I don't. Good night. It's time for me to go to bed because night has fallen. Is that funny? No.
No.
Or fallen night?
You tried.
Fallen night, night fallen. Yeah, I couldn't string the words together.
Yeah.
All right. Bye. A joke as bad as fallen night. All right. Bye.
Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Akiba's Trip, Hellbound and Debriefed, developed by Acquire Corp, published by Exceed and Marvelous USA, released July 20th on the Switch, PS4, and PC for $39.99. Supernatural creatures are stalking the pop culture mecca of Akihabara. I can't say that word.
Akihabara.
Akihabara. There we go. And you know that because they've turned you into one of them. Their only weakness and yours is sunlight, which means there's only one way to stop them all. Call them out on the streets, knock their clothes off, and expose their skin before they can do it to you. Purnell, tell us about your time with Akiba's trip.
So Akiba's trip, which for those who haven't caught it yet, is actually basically like a joke way of wrestle saying Akiba strip. Akihabara strip. The idea behind this game is fairly straightforward. You are a kid, nondescript anyway, who, while going out to look for info on his missing friend, stumbles across a vampire who almost kills you, but at the last minute you are saved by a girl who turns you into a vampire just like her and the guy who assaulted you. So you are then immediately drafted by a quote-unquote government agency that has been tasked with trying to stop the vampire threat because they believe you are their best chance of helping them. So how does this actually play out in the form of the actual gameplay? Well, for the most part, it boils down to you being sent around on various missions throughout the city of the area of Akihabara, and eventually other areas too, to fulfill missions and obligations to stop vampires. Though, admittedly, that's not always the case because eventually things can happen, which will result in some changes, resulting in you wondering if what you've been told is always 100% true. But to get to that point, though, even after you get to that point, battle will take place in one very specific fashion. You will see people, and by their core, they will just be just a bunch of people. You're walking around different districts of Akihabara, and when you go to these districts, which you select off of a map, it'll just be a bunch of stores lining the streets that you can go into and shop for equipment and books, which I'll talk about in a second. But you'll also see people walking up and down the street, just like a populated city. And honestly, the funny thing is some of the people you interact with you too. Like, you might get a person that walks up to you and say, "Hey, man, you got some money?" And you can say, you know, "No." Or, of course, they'll try to mug you. Or you can just say, "No, I'll mug you first," and just beat them up. And other such things. But you'll eventually get an item called like a mirror soul, which when used on the public, it interfaces with your camera, which allows you to snap a photo. And if the photo reveals no image of the person you took a picture of, they are a shadow soul, vampire, whatever. And you will then engage combat with them. When you're in combat, the way you engage them is by using weapons to attack. You have a low attack, a medium attack, and a high attack. And each of those are also meant to target a specific level of clothing. So, like, let's say high would be meant to target a hat or headphones. Low would target pants, mid would target like a vest. And your goal is to do damage to whittle down the articles of clothing. And then eventually, when they reach a certain threshold, you can then either break them off or you can rip them off. When you rip enough clothing...
Bow, wow.
Well, yeah, but they play a silly damn game, except for some of the really weird, creepier fetishes that might factor in. But again, as funny as it may sound, I mean, really, you boil down to it, that's Akihabara. I mean, they're like, hey, people like cat girls and all kinds of crazy stuff, whatever. But if you knock off all the clothing of who would be a shadow soul, that person will then burn up and die. If you tear all the clothing off of a normal person, they will become embarrassed and they will run away from you in sheer panic. And the funny thing about that, you might think, okay, well, you'll never really attack people. Your goal is to stop the shadow souls. Well, this is Akihabara, baby, and the rules aren't always so straightforward. You'll get into a fight with one guy, two people will see you fighting and think, you know, it's a great idea. Let's get in on this. And they'll start fighting you too. And now all of a sudden you get your ass kicked by a bunch of people that you wanted nothing to do with 2 seconds ago, but whatever. But that's also kind of part of the interesting aspects of the game is the whole charm of it. Hell, the police might be walking by, see you guys fighting, the cop will run over and arrest you and then throw you in jail. You got to pay a fine to get out of prison. So sometimes the police officer will actually arrest some of the other people and then they'll get arrested and you'll be free to go. So it's like weird stuff like that can happen too. So I feel like the description I just gave would make combat sound like it's a great time. And at its core, it kind of should be. But there are some issues here. So for those not in the know, this Akiba strip was actually a port of a game that came out originally in Japan back in like 2010 or so like that. And it was basically the first Akiba Strip game. We eventually got the sequel, which is much, you know, more refined and built out. It's not perfect, but it's more refined than this one. And you can kind of see a little bit of that in the combat because, for example, I mentioned the low, medium, and high, but there's no real comboing, so to speak. You can buy books that will give you a third attack and a combo string, but it'll only be the string for that style. So like a low attack, you can do hit. Y, and then if you buy the book, hit Y again and do the third attack. And that is literally the combo. There is no mixing and matching to go from low to high or medium to high or whatever. So that's kind of an annoyance. There's no lock on. Lock on sounds like, well, whatever, man. Just be a quote-unquote real gamer and play without lock on, which would be fine, except for the fact that due to how wild and rambunctious combat can get, you'll find yourself sometimes just like swinging at dead air, which leaves you wide open to the computer who doesn't swing at dead air. They're aiming for you. So it gets to be annoying sometimes, especially when you've got like multiple targets on the screen. Like, I'm targeting that guy. I need to take his pants off. But it's like, nope, you're taking that guy's pants off. And unfortunately, his pants durability is too high, which means you technically just kind of wasted a move. Sucker. So it's like that's kind of an annoyance. Also is the fact that since this was a PSP game, there's not a lot of onboard memory on the PSP. So rather than give you like large swaths of map that you can explore, you're actually selecting small areas of the map to explore on your actual on the main map screen. So like you'll select, like, there's like Main Street. You have to select four different areas of Main Street from the map screen and then go to each individual one, which isn't always bad. I mean, something you can kind of get over, but every once in a while, you'll be needing to see certain targets show up on that screen to rob them of their clothing or to fulfill a mission or whatever. And if you don't see them, you need to leave and come back to load them up. And you don't know which section of the street they're on, so you're like, okay, well, I'll leave, come back, whereas in another fashion, you might just walk around until they just show up. But it's a small annoyance there. The combat is the real main annoyance aspect of thing. But once you start leveling up more, because you do level up in this game, you'll learn, you know, a few more attack moves. Your stats will go up. And then you can also buy new abilities at stores. What types of abilities? Well, you can buy, you know, like I said earlier, the aforementioned follow-up string on attacks. You learn the ability to rip off clothing but not destroy the clothing, which technically means you're stealing people's clothes instead of destroying their clothing. we're still roughhousing, but at least you're not wasting garments. So you end up doing stuff like that, and you'll buy, like, you know, just general equipment, like, you know, your tops, your bottoms, your weaponry, your accessories. And as you start building more of that stuff out, the combat does start to become a little bit more fully flowing and like more intriguing. But at the core, you can still tell as you play further and further in the game that it still could have used some more refinement, which it did get in further later games. So it's not like it went to waste or anything.
No.
But I will say, even though I can't go so far to say this is like a must-have buy or anything like that, I can say that if you come into this knowing what you're going to get, I guess the first thing I want to say is if you've been curious about Akiba Strip, I genuinely recommend playing the second game first if you have access to the console it's on, which was the PlayStation Vita, or cross our fingers that they end up porting that to the Switch next, which would be freaking great. But if you don't have that and you're still curious about what the heck is this game about, making vampires bare their buttocks on the street for amusement and experience points, well, I still think this game is fun for that. It's just a matter of you need to know what you're getting on here, because again, this is just an HD port of an old game.
Yeah.
It still was something that I had fun with. It's not that I was bored or anything like that. Though, like I said before, you do need to also pay attention to like some of the stripping, because like one of the earlier missions in the game, you have to actually learn how to strip a specific type of person so you can then steal their clothes and then pose as one of them. But the game does not really tell you that. You just kind of have to just realize, oh, wait a minute, what if I dress up as these guys? Will it work? Boom, it does work. But if you don't, you know, pay attention to that kind of thing, or even think maybe this will draw this person out or whatever, you'll be running in circles for ages. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like I did before I realized it.
But aside, like I said, it's still an enjoyable time. I still had fun with my experience with this game. I will say that it might be something like, what are they charging for this? Like 40?
Yeah, it's $40. What is your verdict?
I'm not going to tell other people what to do with their money because if
that's your job, Purnell.
God damn it. All right, fuck. If you don't have money to burn like that, and basically if you don't mind paying for the experience, you know, $40 isn't going to kill you. I think it's a buy it, or a high end try it. I'll call it. Let's go with that high end try. But if money is a little tighter for you and it needs to be like a really hard sell every which way, let it go on a bit of a sale because at $20, this would be more of a buy it level game, I think. But at 40, it's a little bit harder to sell to people who are hurting, who aren't like just tossing money around like willy nilly, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense.
So hopefully that was a semi informative descriptor of
let us know.
Gravy.
Tell us, fans, let us know what you think of the show. Oh man. All right, next game to talk about is called Observer System Redux, developed and published by Bloober Team, released physically July 23rd on Xbox Series X and S and PS5 for $29.99. The year is 2084 in a dark cyberpunk world shattered by plagues and wars. Become a neuropolice detective and hack into the jagged minds of others. Make use of anything they felt, thought, or remembered to solve the case and catch the elusive killer. Cole, tell us about your time with Observer System Redux.
Have I ever told y'all that I like games made by Bloober?
You've mentioned it possibly in passing, maybe?
Yeah. Just as an afterthought, yeah, from time to time.
It's like Bloober, you know, yeah.
Bloober is like one of my favorite developers fucking ever. So let me just go on a limb here and say I'm probably not disappointed with this upgrade. I'm not disappointed at all. They have learned a lot of lessons from the original release that some aspects of the game may not have worked as well, or some of the content could have been a little smoother. They've taken those lessons and really like ran with them for this Redux. They've actually taken some parts of the game out and then they've added in new content. They've also added more accessibility options, which Observer absolutely needed. They went so far as to add into where you can change the color for all of the cursors and anything that you can interact with. They made it to where you don't have to hold it. If you don't, it's all toggle, so you don't have to hold it anymore, which is one of my biggest gripes because everybody knows I don't like to have to hold the button. So you can just tap the button instead of holding it to interact. They added in toggles for 4K and ray tracing. And this is where I think the game might have hit its hitch. It's one of the best things about the game, but it might be a result of one of the worst things about the game. For the 4K and ray tracing, this is a cyberpunk dystopia and, you know, there's a nano plague and everything's fucking gross and grimy and it looks like it should. And even with the first game or the first version of the game, it was like, okay, this looks visually impressive. I was surprised by the look of Observer on the Xbox One. The way that it looks now will blow you the fuck away. Okay? If you turn on 4K and ray tracing, there are these dust motes floating in the air and just the light reacts off of them. They've gone in and added all new animations for characters. They've added new character models. Just my first thought with Observer on the Xbox One was, this looks great, but people look kind of waxy. And when you look at them now, it's almost photorealistic. It's kind of creepy. We're balancing on Uncanny Valley here. Like, we're standing on the ledge and we're looking over and we're like, that's an awful deep ravine there. And we're about to fall. It looks incredible. But it also, it makes the world feel more real. I cannot stress enough just the difference in exploring this world and knowing what it looked like before and seeing it now. Like before, there was like, there were these, you know, everything in this cyberpunky kind of world is like LEDs and funky lighting, and that lends itself to looking really cool, but you don't realize how flat the Xbox One version was
until you see this one.
It now. And you're just, the way the lights just flicker around the doorways and just how much more dynamic and realistic the lighting feels. It just is really out of the park. Holy fuck. Good job, guys. Good job. Now, let me get to why I think that's both a blessing and a curse. It seems pretty obvious that this is like the System Redux PC port or PC version being ported, because there's still a lot of references to, you know, oh, if the performance dips, turn this down so that it doesn't affect your GPU as bad. And you're like, I don't have that option. So there's definitely like some references there that implies they didn't quite localize everything for the Xbox. It's fine. I had everything turned on a Series X, on a 4K TV with HDR and all that, and it just fucking looked incredible. It played incredible. I don't have a single fucking complaint. I even had the field of view bumped up, and it didn't so much as stutter. However, there were some game-breaking bugs present in the PC version, and they are very much still there. I would assume that on PC these have been patched out by now, but on the Xbox version, they've probably ported an older version of the PC game with plans to update it, because that's kind of the process that these go through. So I wouldn't be surprised if these don't get patched later, but I definitely had several instances right away, like loading the game up and the very first car scene, I lost all dialogue audio. And I only had audio from interacting with things. And then what was supposed to be a cutscene come up, and it was just replaying the scene on loop on the computer, but there wasn't anything to actually progress and no option to interact or anything. I tried a couple times to shut the game down, restart it, restart a new save. It would hit it again. Eventually, I uninstalled the game, did a fresh recycle of my power cycle of my Xbox and loaded it back up and was able to progress. But there were other instances where I would run into, like, as soon as I would catch that the dialogue audio was gone, I was like, oh no. And I would shut it down and start over again.
So typical Bloober fashion, it's a great game, but it's buggy.
Yeah, and it just, they're good for fixing these, though. Like, I feel bad when I always have to be like, yes, it's a Bloober game. Yes, I love it, but it's got some bugs. But they are good about patching these things later on. Like, I still get updates to Layers of Fear regularly. Okay? So I'm not in any way going to be like, don't buy this, it's broken mess, because they'll probably fix it, but it is something you need to know is there.
Yeah.
But everything else is great, and I'm very happy with it.
Well, then $30, what is your verdict on System Redux?
If you've played it and you know you like it, pick it up again. You're not going to be disappointed. You definitely want to see it as it is in its current state, because it will just blow you away. If you have not played Observer and this is your first foray into it, be mindful that it's got bugs. Be mindful that they'll probably be fixed, but it does kind of knock it down to like a recommended try it, just because some people are going to pick that shit up, get to that first breaking bug and go, well, that was a waste of money. No. And then never try the game. And that's kind of a shame. Like, it really hits right away when it did it. I was like, the funny thing is that I even checked to see if there had been an update before the show, because if there was, I was going to be like, hold off until Thursday. But when I was looking around, somebody had posted 8 minutes before I had started searching that they had hit the same bug. And I was like, well, no update yet. But I'm sure there will be one.
Well, you're seems like you're happy with it, so
buy it even with the issues. If you haven't played it, be a little more on the recommended try it side, just because you need to know that it's got its issues.
Yeah. All right, well, next game to talk about is called Urban Trial Tricky Deluxe Edition, developed and published by Tate Multimedia, released July 22nd on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Grab your seat and pull off the most insane tricks and combos on your motorbike, ride freely, spin around in the air, go back and forth, and let yourself be carried away by the fun, fast-paced gameplay, colorful visuals, and smooth controls. Chris, tell us about your time with Urban Trial Tricky Deluxe Edition.
Did they say go wherever you want or something like that?
Go back and forth and let yourself be carried away by the fun, fast-paced gameplay.
Oh, okay. I thought that it said, like, go anywhere. And I'm like, well, you can only go in two directions.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point. Okay, so Urban Trial Tricky is a... I don't know what the official name of this genre is, but it's the same like kind of vein as something like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater or whatever. It's a doing tricks in a small stage kind of jam. And
it's similar to Trials or to Joe Danger, if you're familiar with those games.
There you go. I'm not. So thank you. That's helpful. So yeah, it is where you play as a kid on a little motor bike thing, and you basically ride back and forth in these stages that are set up with these elaborate, you know, sort of ramps and like things, or like a construction site is one of them, which is, you know, really, really dangerous, and you will kill this kid a lot. And you are meant to basically do as many tricks as you can possibly stuff into the time limit, whereupon you are ranked at a 1 to 5 star scale. I assume you can get more than one star. I never have.
Proud of you.
Yeah, I know. And you can also collect pick-upables and like money and things like that. And of course, all of that goes towards unlocking, of course, the next stage, as well as different bikes, different looks for your character. Although you can already dress up as a shrimp for free, so they kind of gave that away. Like,
oh, well, then what else is there?
What else is there? Yeah, exactly. The shrimp costume is already unlocked, which, you know, bonus points for that. And so, you know, you can also unlock different kind of tricks that you can do, and you can assign those to the trick buttons on, you know. Well, I have no idea why you would play this with a keyboard. I played it with a controller. And but yeah, so the for somebody like me who hasn't played it very much, although I got through the tutorials and learned what the tricks did, like how to perform the tricks and things like that, how to do a backflip and how to do a 360 in the air, or turn my bike around really quickly, or to do one of the two default moves, which are Soldier and Superman, both of which caused me to turn the voice acting off. your kid yells out these moves every time, and it's like, after many failed attempts to get that first star, I was like, okay, I've had enough of this. But, you know, the music's actually pretty fun. It's nice and funky, as you would expect. But anyways, the thing that I kind of didn't learn, and I found out it's kind of in a later tutorial, is that in order to get like even passable, like one star, like kind of scores, it's not about doing the combos. It's about how you chain them together, because it's sort of a thing where the best thing to do is not just repeat like a trick, or like try to do the trick, you know, the most, like the most backflips or the most front flips or whatever, is to like, you know, in the same jump, like do like 3 or 4 different tricks and then kind of chain them together. And eventually it starts introducing like a score multiplier. And then that's how you really get that, that score going up. So it was a frustrating beginning for me on this one, because they didn't really make that super clear. And now that I'm doing it more, I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of obvious now. But having said, it is very fun. It's very fast, like not fast moving or whatever, but like if you fall over and break your kid's neck, which, by the way, the character models, like, something happens anytime you hit your character, you know, you just have to like press a button and then restart from where you left off, basically, and at no penalty or anything like that. Of course, they don't penalize you for destroying this kid's life and nervous system. They kind of do this thing with the character model where they basically remove the skeleton. So your kid ragdolls in like the craziest ways. Like, he is just being wrecked.
Nice. I love ragdoll physics in games like this.
Yeah, your kid gets absolutely wrecked. And actually, I found myself using some of my time just, even though you don't get points for it, I tried to murder my child in many ways that were very entertaining to me. So I like when games let you do that.
And that's what's most important in the end, having fun for you.
Exactly. So I didn't end up getting super far in this game because honestly, I feel like the point threshold is very high for new players. You know, there's so, you know, I'm very slow to collect like these gold stars that I need to kind of move on. However, I'm having a lot of fun getting there. So that's kind of the point more, I think.
Yeah, well, $20 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's a buy it. You know, for the amount of content that you get a lot of levels, lots and lots of levels, and different types of things. Like, you can, you know, do, there are ones that are more based on speed, and there's more, or not speed, but like, you know, that are based on getting the amount of points, and there's some that are like more specific challenges, and of course every stage has like five or six different ways to get bonus stars and stuff like that. There's a lot to keep you busy in here, and you know, it, because you get to unlock new tricks, like that's pretty cool, but like it kind of retains that simplicity all throughout. So you know, you don't really, as soon as you get used to it, then there's not as much of a curve. I will warn brand new players that you will spend a lot of time in the first stage trying to get to the second stage if you don't start learning about those point combos. So, yeah.
Sounds fun. I might pick this one up. I think it's on sale for like one more day on Xbox. So if you're listening to this on MP3, you're probably too late. But
too late. I'll just wait for the Switch version to go on sale. I'm sure it will.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Rogue Wizards, developed and published by Spellbind Studios, released July 15th on Switch, July 21st on Xbox and PS4 for $14.99. Battle creatures, collect loot, master magic, and build your very own wizard tower sanctuary in this roguelike dungeon crawling RPG. Fernell, tell us about your time with Rogue Wizards.
So, Rogue Wizards, you kind of just described it. It is a roguelike dungeon crawler game where at the offset you choose from one of two avatars, a male or a female, and you are immediately just kind of thrown into the fray. Dungeon exploration takes place in the form of dungeons where the level isn't persistent, at least visually, because the map is randomly generated. But when you're walking around, the level, like the tiles that make up the stage, kind of rise up and form the maze as you progress. And when you walk away from that environment, the tiles go back down. And what this ultimately means is that though you can bring up a map, this does mean that you can't really see what's in front of you, monster or loot-wise, until you're probably within like five or six ticks of it. So it makes this a little bit more interesting than the norm when you're exploring dungeons in this game. However, you're walking through these dungeons, and as you explore, you'll come across enemies and you'll come across items. Now, the items in this game, I feel like, from a typical roguelike perspective, are a little different in an interesting way. Because whereas normally you might get like special attacks in these games that affect different radiuses of combat tiles, in this game, the actual weapons themselves do it. So an axe attacks three spaces in front of you, a lance goes out in front of you, a chakram bounces off of multiple enemies in the same room, and then the arrow is just typical arrow. Swords generally end up being a single target, but they usually end up also being the more powerful, you know, if you're comparing similar tier weapons between the two or group. But you'll be jumping between all these different weapons as you find them for the situation, and you can
unequip and equip new weapons during combat, though by doing so, you waste a turn. So make sure it counts when you decide to do so. But I did like the idea that weapons had those types of properties, because it wasn't as simple as picking a weapon just based on how powerful it was. Sometimes it was also based off of the range of attack that it had.
Yeah, in one example, I got surrounded by this one monster that kept spawning more monsters. And I kept picking them off one at a time with my sword, but I was just getting overwhelmed. So I switched to an axe, which attacked in an arc, and I would attack like three at once, and I started clearing them out. So it's definitely it definitely helps to have the proper tool for the job when you're dealing with monsters.
Oh, yeah. In addition to weapons, of course, there's also general equipment too. You have headgear, chest gear, a necklace sort of thing, and a ring. And all of these different items generate stat buffs for your character, usually in the form of, you know, attack power or finesse, which I guess refers to speed in the game. And with weapons being, of course, power. So you'll get these items that when you equip them, they'll increase your defense stat and occasionally one of your three main stats. Now, just like in these games normally, sometimes these weapons, these items will have one of two things. A socket, which can be, you know, junctioned with a gem that you can find to give it an extra property. Or sometimes it'll just also come with extra properties by default. But in addition to the norm, as you use the same piece of equipment over time, it can eventually learn new traits and perks all on its own just by you wearing it for a long period of time, which is kind of nice in that if you find a favorite piece of equipment, there's a little bit of extra value to just wearing it a little bit longer, because now it'll become even more of your favorite piece of equipment because it's like then better. So that ends up becoming the main, you know, joy loop of the game, finding new gear, you know, deciding which is better, what is worse, but then also deciding what's worth keeping on for the sake of getting extra goods. Though also worth noting, the chests in this game, they all need some keys to open. Like, treasure chests don't just open on their own like they in a lot of these types of games. In this game, you need keys, which are usually dropped by enemies, but you can also buy them back in town and bring into the dungeons with you. Speaking of town, there is a town in the game. Ha, shock. But it's the hub of the game. So as you play through different dungeons in the story mode, you will eventually come across different people. And when you bring them back to the town, they will open up a new facility for you. And it's not really a town builder so much as it's just new facilities literally opening up as you find people. So it's not like you're paying a guy money to come to your town. It's just like if he's in the dungeon, it's likely scripted. He comes back. Now you have a new facility, like as a blacksmith or extra storage unit, or, you know, a junctioner. Junction being like, you know, socketing items and stuff. And then other facilities as well. There's even a daily chest in the town, which if you open it, it gives you a special piece of loot, which you can do it once per day. And then you can pay money to upgrade the facilities that gives you better stuff. Also, you can spend money to upgrade the other facilities, too. So that aforementioned blacksmith that eventually comes to town, you can spend money plus also spend the prerequisite item, in this case, a hammer that you can find in dungeons to upgrade the shop. But a cool thing in the way this game does it is you don't necessarily just have to pay the money. If you find a bunch of loot on your runs and you sell it to the shop, the sale counts towards the cost of upgrading the building, which means all you got to do is just dump enough junk and you don't have to spend from your own kitty to actually pay to upgrade your stuff. You can end up doing it for pretty much free, which I kind of like. It gives you extra incentive to take stuff back to town. Though, also in typical fashion for these games, I almost rarely even bother with shop stuff aside from the healing items, is because usually they're finding better gear on your dungeon runs. And I didn't even get to the magic yet, because this game also has a magic system. Magic in this game works similar to how you equip stuff, in that if you get a spell, you have to go into your spell book and equip it to your quick action bar. That becomes an attack you can do. But unlike the gear, magic spells are dependent on having the right number of essence found, usually from purchases or from killing monsters, to use it. So, for example, a fireball spell might cost 2 fire essence. If you have 10, that means you can cast 5 fireballs before you can't do it anymore. So it prevents you from spamming ad nauseum these nice attacks. As you find books on dungeon runs, you can use the books to either evolve, or rather, improve the spells that you're currently using, or unlock new spells in that chain of element, up to three element, up to three spells per element. And there's about seven elements in the game, six or seven elements. So there's a fair number of spells to work around with in the game. And they even have enemies that are weak to some and strong against others. So you'll be dancing around a bit. This game has a lot going on for it as far as like time sync, if you want to put it in there, because the story mode is one thing, but there's also an endless mode that exists in the game too, where the sole goal is to pretty much dive as far down as you can get and get better gear as you progress. So essentially it becomes like an endless goal to see just how far you can go and how cool the stuff can you find in the process of doing so. Of course, being me and the way I play these games like chocolate, I stuck with the story mode because I needed to end at some point. But if you're the type who's like, nah, I can go on this forever, and I need me a roguelike, well, here's your answer, Fishbulb. Just play this till forever it comes, which will be never. Well, what did you think of it?
I had a lot more fun with it than I thought. I thought this was going to be a slower turn-based strategy RPG, but instead it's very quick-paced. Every move that you make, the opponent makes a move.
Because they're watching.
But it's really quick paced, where it's not one side plans out their move and then you move so many spaces and then you do your attack. This is just one spot, one action. You do your turn, the enemy does their, just back and forth. It's fast paced and it's enjoyable. I'm really having a good time with this one.
I do need to mention one thing though, just in case. It might have just been my hard drive that's running it or my system, I don't know. But I was actually almost ready to bomb this game because, well, not bomb it, but like detriment, give it a detriment or demerit. Because for the first, I want to say, hour or so when I was playing it, for whatever reason, like opening chests or attacking certain enemies or whatever took extra long. Like it wasn't just open a chest, get the stuff. It was press the button on the chest. Okay, now wait like 20 seconds. Now it's open. Weird. And then you can pick stuff up. Yeah, it was really weird. And at first I thought that was just the game. I was like, who in the hell would release a game that does this? No one's going to want to play this. But out of nowhere, at one point, it just cleared itself up and I never experienced it again. So I just wanted to note that in case other people notice it too, if they end up picking this up, I can at least say, yeah, I experienced it too, but it just kind of went away. So I don't know what caused it, but it didn't stick around.
I didn't run into that at all. It might have been just a weird glitch on your end or who knows. But $15 on Rogue Wizards, what do you think?
I think it's a solid try. I mean, if you're looking for a new roguelike, actually, now think about it, on the Xbox especially, make it a buy. I can't think of too many roguelikes on the Xbox. And I had a good time playing this. So if you're looking for a roguelike on this system, I think this is a good direction to go with it.
Cool. Yeah, I can agree with that. I think it's definitely a better time than I imagined, and I'm going to stick with it and put some more time into this because I'm having a really good time, and I'll always appreciate a roguelike or a strategy style game that has fast paced combat, as long as it keeps you moving.
This one definitely does do that.
And I also like the little bonuses, like you clear a level of all the enemies, you get an experience bonus, you get all the treasure chests, you get an experience bonus, you find all the traps, you get an experience bonus.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, and you got to be careful too, because the idea behind that is like, well, it's cool to get it, but if you're getting your ass handed to you, yeah, you might want to run. And it's worth noting that, at least from what I recall, I mean, I had one sidekick, because you get little animal sidekicks sometimes too, who could heal me for a little bit at a time. And I mean a little bit. He was giving me like 3 hit points at a shot. And aside from that, in a lot of cases, it became a battle of attrition. Like if the enemies were getting up to me, it was me beating them up until I was about to die and I drank a potion. Like there's no dodge button in this game. But then again, none of these games really generally have a dodge button. It's usually how it goes. With a typical roguelike, it ends up being bounced up by the whole hunger meter, refilling your health. That doesn't exist in this game. Yeah. So carry some potions, be ready to use them, or a cauldron event item to produce normal potions if you need them. See, we're still talking about this game.
Well, if you're hungry, the next game is perfect for you.
Is it dinner? The game?
Kind of. It's called Super Freddy Spaghetti 2, developed by Playful Pasta, published by Rattle Lake Games, released July 23rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Switch for $4.99. Freddy 2.0 is here. Freddy is spaghetti. Oh, and conscious. Freddy 2.0 has got a job. The story starts as you plunge headfirst into the workplace. Overcome the environment, master your spaghetti, and run to the coffee machine. Don't be late on your first day. Chris, tell us about your time with Super Freddy Spaghetti 2.
Okay, so I didn't actually play the first Freddy Spaghetti. But
Cole
I
did. Cole, what did you think of the first game?
I fucking hated it. That's why you get to play this one, because I said no.
Well, I guess that's all right, because I didn't hate it. So, but, yeah, so I didn't play the first one, so I'm not sure what the story is, but the second one starts with saying, well, we don't need to tell you about the story from the first game, just go and play it. Literally, the narrator says.
The story is basically like, they made sentient pasta.
Yeah.
For reasons, and that's about it.
Well, yeah, yeah. And, so, you know, same deal here. You are a sentient piece of wet spaghetti, and you're, yeah, you're basically given a job, and I don't want to spoil too many gags, but let's just say that there's a very popular TV show about going to work in a workplace, and this game very deftly parodies that. And so, like, not only are you doing things, well, like, okay, so they're like, it's separated into like little micro stages, basically. So like sometimes it's just getting your spaghetti to walk across the room, which of course you do through a, you know, I don't know that there's a name for this genre. Maybe we can come up with one, but like something like Human Fall Flat or Octodad Dadliest Catch. You've got a character that is not, you know, good at moving, and you got to like control one end of it with one shoulder button and the other end, the other side with the other shoulder button. And you kind of have to ambulate, by pushing the buttons or holding them down to get like a more, jumpy type motion. And of course the character itself is totally limp. So it's kind of not, you know, it's not going to do anything on its own. So, yeah, it's, but this one compared especially to Human Fall Flat, which I purchased and tried to play, like this one controls a lot better, I think. It's not, I actually did not have too much trouble controlling my spaghetti. And
that's
yeah,
it's good because it was a pain in the ass in the first game.
I think it's the same control scheme, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just good at it.
Maybe.
Because like, I watched a video of the other one and it looks like it's exactly the same thing. But yeah. You ambulate and or hop with your spaghetti. Like either it might just be going from one end of the scene to the other end. Sometimes it's actually doing stuff. Sometimes it's knocking over things. Sometimes it's playing ping pong with Jack, the handsome salesman who keeps going up to the receptionist to talk to Jill, the receptionist who's clearly into him but won't admit it. And the funny thing about this game is that between stages, you know, of course, there's a general narrator, but also it will then cut to one of the other characters talking about Freddy Spaghetti in that sort of way that this popular TV series would do. And yeah, I could not. I like, so I liked Octodad Dadliest Catch. I didn't like Human Fall Flat, and I don't like at all like something like Goat Simulator. So it's like this type of game is really hit or miss for me, but this one actually I liked it, and I really loved the humor.
I might have to give this one a shot. You're selling it pretty well.
Well, I just really think that it's an effective parody, and it's made funnier by the fact that instead of talking about like some terrible boss or something like that, or, you know, just being a kind of bland TV show, it's like they're talking about a piece of spaghetti, and like some characters are like, does nobody understand that this is just a piece of spaghetti? Like some people are like frustrated at it, and then some people are like, and then every time you like do something and stuff, it's like, well, we've promoted him to head of IT to see how he would work in that capacity. And it's just like, yeah, this, you keep failing up. It's like, it's hilarious. But yeah, if you didn't like the first game, I mean, it seems like this game is exactly the same gameplay, so that might be a hindrance for you. Again, this micro genre of like hard to control, you know, Sumotori style game is, you know, sometimes it hits with me, and this one actually I liked. I'm probably going to see this one through to the end because there's a ton of levels, so I didn't get through all of them.
Cool.
So. It's like there's like 10 seasons and each season has like, you know, 20 levels or something like that. Oh, some crazy thing. Yeah.
Well, it'll keep you busy for $5. What do you say?
I like this one. I'm going to say go ahead and get it. And if you didn't play the first game, then it doesn't matter. The game literally tells you, it's like, well, you already know what happened in the last game and it has nothing to do with this one. So don't worry about it. So there you go.
Cole, you going to give it a shot?
No, probably not. I don't know. Maybe. This the thought of playing it made me sneeze just now. So
nice.
Well, maybe watch a gameplay video. I don't
maybe,
know.
Maybe.
I mean, I don't mean to tell people how to enjoy this game for free, but I will say most of the joy of the game is not through playing it.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Colorful Color, developed by Gaganfei.
I don't know. You're on your own with that one.
I don't know. This is a pretty good one. Gaganfei. I don't know. Published by Phoenix Reborn Games. Released July 23rd on Windows 10 for $4.99. July 28th on Xbox One for $4.99. It is not a cross-buy title. They are separate purchases with separate achievement lists because that's what you care about. Colorful Color is a puzzle labyrinth game where your goal is to reach the exit while matching the right colors in the room and interacting with different mechanics. Cole, what'd you think?
This is great. Seriously. I like these kind of sliding block puzzles that you can kind of just do mindlessly if you sit and look at it for a few seconds and then push a couple buttons and you beat the level. I'm down for that. 100%. So when you first start off, the levels are really simple and there's only like two colors. So the level will be split on a diagonal, for example, or in half. And you'll have one color on one side, one color on the other. You have a small little block with a little smiley face and it will be one of the two colors. Whatever color you slide that block into is what color it needs to be before it hits that wall. Because if it's not, you're starting all over. Can't mix the colors here. This isn't a paint palette. So let's say that you want to press up on the D-pad and go up, or use your analog stick, or if you're playing on Windows 10, you use your arrow keys. I played it both ways. It's fine. Controls, well, it's four buttons. It doesn't have a lot to ask of, you know, function. but you press up, then if your little character is green and the wall that you're going to be hitting, it needs to be green. If it's yellow, you're starting over. If it's pink, you're starting over.
Kids.
It needs to be green. There are, as the levels get more complicated, there are little portals that you can hit that will change the color of your little block, or will teleport you elsewhere in the level so that you have an option to hit another color before you fuck up. you get quite a bit of redemption opportunity here. As long as you're not hitting the wrong color, you can fuck around and try out a couple of different options for actually solving a puzzle. There's around 50 or so levels. They're all really good. I actually did play more than the 20 that you need for an achievement.
What?
Because
there's, what, 50 levels?
I think so, yeah. I was looking on the PC version, and I think it has more. Well, I don't think we have more than 50. I tapped out somewhere around like 43, and it was just because of time. That doesn't mean that I won't be sitting here tonight half asleep and like pressing up, left, down. because it's one of those that, like, you can just kick your feet up and play it kind of mindlessly. The puzzles do get hard, though. They are actually really well designed, and sometimes you have to sit and think about, you know, if I go through that portal, where the fuck am I going to end up? you may have to fail a few times just to figure out how the design is meant to work. And simultaneously, some of them are just like, oh, you pressed up. Good job. You win. But that usually when that happens, it's introducing a new mechanic to you that you're going to see in more complicated puzzles later on.
Yeah.
So I think it's really well done. I'm surprised that this is a $5 game because I would have happily paid 10 or more for it.
Don't give them ideas. What are you doing?
I know it, but it was good. Like it's pretty. The colors are well done. Everything looks nice.
It's beautiful in its simplicity. That's what I love about it.
Yeah,
it's such a simplistic looking game, but the mechanics work, the puzzle layouts work, and it's just a really cool game.
Yeah. Like you can't possibly ask for anything more from this kind of game. They've just gone ahead and been like, look what we can do. And they've produced it and here you are. And you're going to get you a quick completion out of it, too. Man, shut up and take my money.
Cool. $5, your verdict?
Fucking buy it, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, one final game to talk about tonight is a preview of Disturbing Forest Demon's Path, developed by Pantheon Studio, published by Ultimate Games. Demon's Path Prologue released July 22nd on Steam for free. The full game is planned for PC release in Q4 2021 with a Switch release planned for 2022. Chris, tell us, what is Disturbing Forest Demon's Path?
Okay, so Disturbing Forest Demon's Path, which is a name I keep forgetting. I struggled with it, even though you literally just said it in the last sentence. This is a first-person exploration puzzle game with some combat elements. You basically play as a dude who... They only bothered to give his face eyebrows, so I didn't bother to remember his name. But, no, for real, it's a low-poly kind of graphical style with no... it has some textures, some, but it's mostly like just like everybody kind of looks like, you know, blank face, but maybe one feature like a beard or eyebrows or something like that. Maybe a cigarette. I don't know. But, you know, that's just the way the game looks on purpose. And yeah, your boy is Mr. Eyebrows is in jail and somebody's, you know, for being in a war and fighting for the team that lost. You know, that's how you end up in jail sometimes. And somebody, his friend, busts, you know, says, hey, you know, the bad guy wants you to go after this other bad guy and you know, do the old, you know, get the old garroting cable and, you know, choke him out. And in exchange, you'll get your freedom. So go find that evil wizard. I remember the evil wizard's name, Koss, because it reminds, you know, K-O-S-S, because it reminded me of cheap headphones. So I was like, all right, I know this guy. And so the game basically has you playing as Mr. Eyebrows, exploring a foresty kind of area, you know, that may have the odd demon or two, in search of the mad wizard Koss. And it's basically one of those things where, you know, you're walking around, you have a button to toggle detective mode, which will highlight everything in your view, you know, like it turns it into like just this blinding gold color thing. So everything really stands out and you can like kind of pick what you want to look at. And it's a lot of like reading notes attached to boulders and like gathering up ingredients and combining those ingredients to make things like explosives or, you know, other kind of tools that you might need. Occasionally you will pick up a weapon and murder something, but it really feels tertiary to the whole experience because it's like you don't really have hit points or like levels or anything like that. You just, you know, don't get hit because you're made of paper, maybe literally. And, you know, try and whack the thing before it gets to you. But that at least the part I played, the combat was pretty light. I think I ran into like two enemies total. But anywho's, so it's all about like talking and trying to figure out about this wizard and like about these monsters that the wizard's like also hunting. And it's like, you know, kind of who's the real bad guy? Who's, you know, maybe everybody's bad and you just kill them all or something. But, you know, it's more about like getting immersed into the exploration aspect and learning as much as you can about the world, more so than like you know, just go to this shiny light point on the ground and the next story happens, you know? Like, so that's kind of cool about it. I found it interesting, a little goofy at times. I especially like, so when you're in dialogue with another character, they give the character like this kind of idle animation to sort through, you know, so they might move their arm, emphatically, you know, while they're talking. But the thing is, they just keep doing it if you don't move the dialogue on. And in order to also, let's just, you know, that they've been doing that in RPGs for like 20 years now. You know, as soon as the PlayStation came out, they were doing that. Yeah. But what I also like about it is that the camera angles change. And so you get like dramatic camera angle changes while somebody is sitting there doing idle animation talking. And it's like, but nothing's happening. Like they're just saying the same thing. So I don't know. Like, I don't want to drop the name M. Dickey into this review because that's unfair. This is actually a real game, but that's something that cracks me up ever since I saw it in those games. But yeah, like it's interesting. Like I said, it reminded me the most of actually Shadowgate 64, which nobody played, but it's like, you know, Shadowgate, the old point and click adventure game, you know, on the computers and the NES. They made a version for the Nintendo 64 specifically that was a walking around solving puzzles adventure, which I played as a kid, not realizing that it wasn't an RPG. I thought it was going to be. So I was all looking around for enemies and stuff and like trying to gain levels. But it's like, no, you must get this piece of paper and you must find this knife and you must open this panel and push this button. It's like, that's all you do. So that's kind of more what this game is. Although, again, it did have some combat. So,
well, it's a free to play prologue. Is it worth checking out? Should people wishlist the full Disturbing Forest game when it comes out?
Yeah, I think it should be, you know, if you are into like more of the puzzle aspect side of things, then it's a good game to check out. It's kind of like a first person point and click more than anything else. You know, and maybe check out a video or something to check out the graphics and see if that does it for you. Cause you know, some people are turned off by the low poly style. I like it. I don't really have a preference, but and I think actually the backgrounds and stuff are, you know, the actual forest type of thing actually looks pretty good. So
cool.
Yeah, I'd say it's worth a shot.
All right, well, that's it, we're done.
Yay,
we made it through another one.
Back to sleep for me.
Thanks to all y'all for being here. Chris, thanks for waking up from your nap to jump in 2 minutes into show. Pernell, thanks for being here. Oh, thanks for being here. Tim, you're gone, so I don't have to thank you anymore.
Get fucked.
Yeah, fuck thanks you, for Tim. Not being here. Anyone have any final words? Fuck you, Tim.